What should you spend it on? Well, there's lots of good options. First, there are negative ads. But if that's against your principles, there's always attack ads. And of course, there are also ads that are scathing indictments, vicious smears, vindictive slanders, heartless curb stomps, relentless disembowelments, and sociopathic hit jobs. Lastly, there are positive ads. Word of advice, I would avoid the positive ads. They can seem a little desperate. Of course, when all is said and done, there is the slim chance that your candidate will not get elected. Maybe their message didn't resonate. Maybe it was an off-year election and the base wasn't energized. Maybe that whole naked pistol-waving breakdown in a Santa Monica traffic circle thing got taken out of context. Well, don't sweat it. Just because the election is over doesn't mean you have to give up on what inspired you to raise all that money in the first place. Having all that money. You can use your remaining cash however you want. Hire Sarah Palin's relatives as consultants. Buy clothes for Sarah Palin. Pay for hotel rooms for Sarah Palin. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of at least one Sarah Palin who's done very well for herself that way. So clearly, we have the best electoral system in the world. But as perfect as it is deeply flawed. First of all, did you know that many voting booths have no hook to hang up your pants? I found that out the hard way. But even more disturbing, sometimes the guy I voted for doesn't win. Take 2008. I didn't vote for Barack Obama. None of my friends at the club voted for Barack Obama. Nobody I know that is willing to discuss politics with me voted for Barack Obama. So how did he win? There are only two possible explanations. One, I'm out of step with the majority of my fellow citizens. But that's ridiculous because I correctly voted for 5 of the last 9 American Idol winners. Even a black one. Which brings me to the only other possible explanation. Voter fraud. I know, it's shocking. The thought of someone lying to get an I voted sticker made me so sick I could barely finish the Lorna Doones I stole from the table in front of the blood drive. But the facts speak for themselves. In Ohio in 2004, out of the 9 million votes cast, 4 of them were fraudulent. That's more than you can count on one hand, pending a recount of my fingers. And here's more proof ripped straight from the headlines. According to NPR, my home state of South Carolina looked into 6 allegations of voter fraud in the 2010 elections and found that 5 involved clerical or poll worker errors. The 6th case involved a man who had sent in an absentee ballot and then died. You heard that right, folks. Voter fraud is killing people. And once you're dead, your name gets sent to Chicago and put on a Democratic voter roll. Fortunately, there's an easy way to stop this scourge of voter fraud. End voter registration. Because the more voters, the more potential for voter fraud. Just like the more ingredients in a food, the more likely it is that one of them is Chinese drywall. Luckily, since 2008, Idaho, Kansas, Wisconsin, Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas have all passed laws requiring a photo ID to vote. So problem solved, America, since no one has ever managed to fake a photo ID. And if you're still not convinced that the American electoral system is the best, just wait until you hear how other countries handle their elections. That's right. I didn't know this, but it turns out other countries have elections too. For instance, Russia. The Russian electoral system works like this. You are given the option of voting for Vladimir Putin or one of several Putin-sanctioned opponents. You are then poisoned by Vladimir Putin. Canada. With Canadian laws mandating the use of both French and English, candidates there are forced to both kiss babies and French kiss babies. No thanks. India. Indian political debates are impossible to follow and last 9 hours due to the elaborate dance numbers. Also, the losing candidate is reincarnated as tandoori chicken. England. In this supposed democracy, Queen Elizabeth has managed to win every election since 1952. And at any time, Parliament can pass a resolution of no confidence and dissolve the government. May I remind you, This was also the plot of the most boring Star Wars. Mexico. South of the border, all the leading candidates debate how they will fix Mexico's economy and fight the drug cartels. Those people are then assassinated by the Zetas, and the candidate with the most remaining head is declared the winner. Germany. Germans pride themselves on holding sober, thoughtful, carefully deliberated elections. Except for that one time. The Netherlands. Dutch elections are frequently rocked by a so-called June surprise when one of the candidates is caught not visiting a prostitute. Israel. There is no greater friend of Israel's electoral system than yours truly. I stand by the Israeli people's sovereign right to choose leaders that ingathered the Jews to the Holy Land, thus hastening its annihilation during the tribulations that herald the rapture and the return of the Christ. Japan. The Japanese electoral process is tremendously entertaining. A rotting fish is strapped to the candidate's groins. Then they are set adrift in a 7,000-gallon water tank filled with eels on PCP. The winner is chosen by the laughing man in the corner of the TV screen. On inauguration day, the new prime minister transforms into a 50-foot robot lion that lays fiery waste to Hokkaido. And that does it for elections. I'm out. My turn. Bill Farber, Lynchburg, Virginia. Informed voter. Hey, how y'all doing? Yeah, sure. I got a minute to talk. I'm just standing here waiting to vote. Then I got to head back over to the store. I'm pulling a triple shift at the Lowe Depot. But pretty soon I'll be on Easy Street, back to double shifts. Yep, once my candidate wins, folks like me are going to stop getting stomped. Hold on a second here. I'm feeling lucky about this scratch-off. Hold on here. Palm tree. Palm tree. Pirate. Damn it. So close to flamingo bada bingo. Anyway, when I get in that booth, I know exactly who I'm voting for. The guy who's going to stop giving handouts to people like me. Haven't we gotten enough already? Because we're not getting this country back on track unless we broaden the tax base. Folks like me have got no skin in the game. Or skin on the back of my wrist after that accident with the key cutter. Point is, I'm okay paying more taxes now when I'm pre-rich to help future me get the tax cuts I'll deserve. You see, I'm not one of the haves. I'm a have soon. But when I'm a have now, I want there to be more have for me to have. Speaking of which, I got a itchy scratching quarter ready to pay out. Here we go. Ace of diamonds. Ace of hearts. Ace of clubs. Pirate crap. Almost made it to Casino Cash City. The way I look at it, raising my taxes to keep the cuts for the job creators isn't taking money away from me. I'm just sending my money ahead like a scout to find out what it's like to be owned by a rich guy. I'll catch up with it later. It's like those storage pods you can rent when you're moving that you put all your stuff in, then they send it over to your new house to wait for you. Of course, my house got foreclosed, so right now I'm living in the pod. Not bad. Okay, here we go. Last scratch off, pyramid scheme. Ramses. Tutankhamun. Amenhotep. Pirate, son of a bitch. I was halfway in the mummy's purse. No biggie. I may be at the bottom now, but if I pay enough money up, I'll get out of this hole. It's just like a grave. You get in there and start digging, and eventually you're standing on top of the dirt pile looking down on the sucker who just can't stop shoveling. Well, looks like it's my turn to get in that booth and pull the lever. Wish me luck. 4 years from now, when those tax cuts are mine, you'll know where to find me. I'll be living in the fanciest storage pod in town. Okay, let's shake some people up. Okay, got it. Okay. Chapter 7. Justice. Since America is the greatest country on Earth, it naturally follows that it also has the greatest criminals on Earth. So to combat these grade-A bad eggs, we've created the greatest criminal justice system on Earth, as seen 8 times a day on TNT in the various laws and orders. Chung chung. Now, mind you, the police, or order, technically do their job before the prosecutors apply the law. So it should really be called order and law. Wow. Show creator Dick Wolf really shanked that one. Or should I say, Wolf Dick. And I have another Wolf Dick beef. He leaves out the third tine of America's criminal justice spork. I'm talking about the brave men and women of the greatest correction system on Earth. I mean, after the credits roll on Law & Order, these heroes safely store the convicted scumbags in the slammer. The clink, the big house, the fish tank, the pencil holder, the tuna salad, the lamp stand, the light switch. I could go on, but I've run out of objects in my line of sight. That's why I'm tempted to call this chapter Order and Law and Storage. So here we go. First stop, order. Freeze, mother trucker! Turn the volume down on this recording. Do it now! Lower! I said lower! Now back away slowly, hands where I can see 'em. Can you still hear me? No? Okay, then turn it up a little higher. Slowly. Slowly. No sudden moves. Taser, taser, taser! Okay, I'm not there right now, so I'm going to need you to taser yourself. Rub your socks on the carpet and touch a doorknob until you're properly subdued. All right, are we good? I'm sorry I made you ride the lightning, but I had no choice. I had to prove that I know what I'm talking about when it comes to the police, and I do. A lot of my best friends are cops. We shoot the shit, and after a few drinks, we shoot shit. These guys are the real deal. Regular, hard-working, blue-collar folks like yours truly. Of course, my blue-collar is made from the finest chambray. But that's the only difference. Otherwise, me and the cops do the same work. We protect the innocent, and we know when to make things look like an accident. I've even got a badge. My friend Pete passed out on the night of the policeman's benevolent ball. Now all I gotta do is flash it at Smoothie King, and I'm rolling in free cranberry cooler. But let's face it. America is a festering sewer of potential criminals. I know I'd do some pretty terrible stuff if I didn't have to worry about the fuzz. We all would. Just look in the mirror and ask yourself, why did I steal this mirror? The police are the thin blue line that protects you from people like you. So I always go out of my way to show my gratitude for the police's hard work. However, if our parents raised us with love, then as children, we learn to live in fear of authority figures. That's why whenever you see flashing lights in your rearview mirror, you get a feeling in the pit of your stomach like you've done something wrong. Or maybe one of the heroin-filled condoms you swallowed just started to leak. But as I said, I'm great friends with the police. They're just a big bunch of teddy bears with a rigid internal code of silence. At the end of the day, they just want to get the bad guy, you know? So as long as you're not guilty, or look like someone who might be guilty, or hesitate slightly thereby confirming your total guilt, you have nothing to worry about. Remember, all cops want is information to solve a crime. So tell them clearly and confidently about the crime you saw, identify the black man who you think did it, and be on your way. However, there will be times when you are actually guilty. When that happens, and you hear the siren, don't stop. Cop cruisers don't really have the horsepower they used to. As long as you're really good at Grand Theft Auto, you'll get away scot-free. Now, I know that some minorities claim that the police treat them differently, or yo different. That's why I have asked my friend, prominent black Republican P.K. Winsome, to give some extra tips on how to talk to the police. P.K.?
Absolutely. Thank you, Stephen. As a person of color, specifically an African-American businessman with some great deals on Herman Cain 2012 glassware, I know that sometimes you have to go along to get along, but it's hard to go along when you're face down in the pavement because of the potential for fractured cheekbones. So here are some tips for my fellow Afro-motorists to ensure that we all have a safe and productive, unprovoked traffic stop. 1. Don't make any sudden moves. 2. Don't make any gradual moves. 3. Don't move. 4. Keep both hands on the steering wheel of your car. It is your car, right? 5. Do not carry anything that could be mistaken for a weapon, such as cell phones, wallets, combs, keys, Skittles, or hands. 6. Do not wear the following: hooded sweatshirts, sweaters with hoods, sweaters without hoods, hoods without sweaters, turtlenecks, and turtle hoods. And make sure all clothing is non-threatening. For example, wear a yellow golf shirt or wear a different yellow golf shirt. 7. Don't be argumentative or challenge the police with such belligerent questions as, "What did I do?" or "Why'd you pull me over?" or "Yes, officer?" 8. When asked for your license and registration, to lighten the mood, I like to give them a card stating that I'm officially registered as a party animal. Cops love it. You can get your own official party animal registration card at pkjokeid.com. Order in the next 24 hours and you will get them sooner. And my last tip is, be positive. Let a smile be your umbrella. But if something goes wrong and your umbrella ends up scattered all over the highway, check out my new website, pkdentures.com. With denture prices this low, you won't need a bridge loan. Happy motoring!
Thanks, PK. You are the man. Of course, the police can't be everywhere. That's why you must take personal responsibility for your own security. For instance, I live in a gated community. The fence around my neighborhood keeps perpetrators out, unless they have access to a stool. So I also have ADT home security. And of course, I have Sloman home security. I had to hire them to keep an eye on ADT. I mean, those ADT bastards have all my codes. I also keep a Bible on my bedside table. This serves 3 functions. 1, I can swear on it to intruders that I have no valuables. 2, I can use it to remind the drug-fueled maniac with a knife to my throat of the 7th commandment, "Thou shalt not steal." And 3, it's hollowed out and I keep a gun in there. Because no matter how many layers of security you put between yourself and the scum, eventually, the only real friend you have is a warm gun. That's why firearms are near and dear to my heart. And thanks to my concealed carry permit, near and dear to my ankle, my right hip, either side of my rib cage, my back, and, let's say, my musket balls. In fact, firearms are the only object mentioned in the Constitution. Let that sink in, nation. There's a reason the Bill of Rights doesn't cite dustbusters as being necessary to the security of a free state. Guns are part of our national identity, like Spain and bullfighting, or Morocco and exotic spices, or Canada and not having a national identity. So the last thing we need is more gun regulations, like a national gun registry, or a 7-day waiting period, 7 whole days. By then, I won't even remember why I needed a flamethrower in the first place. Isn't it restriction enough that you can only buy guns at gun shows or at gun dealers or at a Walmart or sporting goods stores or at pawn shops or from that guy your cousin Billy knows? Picture this. You're eating dinner with your family when suddenly 4 masked men burst through the window and pistol whip you. Now ask yourself, in this plausible and by no means emotionally manipulative scenario, do you really want to stand up, brush the glass off your shoulder, glare at your assailants and say, "Leave my family alone in 7 days"? Why would you risk that happening and permanently traumatizing your children when you could prevent that by gunning down 4 men in front of them? However, there is one weapon that is even more effective than firepower, and that is the power of psychology. For example, experienced investigators in the police force will often employ a technique known as good cop, bad cop. One friendly policeman gains the trust of a suspect by protecting him from his out-of-control partner. It can be very effective. Anyway, that's it for this part of the recording.
Come to think of it, where did you get this recording? You paid for it, right? What's wrong? You seem a little nervous. We're just talking. By the way, here's a funny story. Some people illegally downloaded this audiobook. You ever hear about anything like that? I'd love to hear your side of the story. Not that I'm accusing you of anything. You want a glass of water? Soda? Go into the kitchen, get yourself a beverage, I'll wait.
Sit down! You're lucky I don't take this book and shove it where the sun don't shine.
Hey, Steve, back off. I got to apologize for my partner. Steve's on edge. He's on probation for use of excessive force. He collects teeth.
We've wasted enough time, Steven. This creep clearly didn't pay for this audiobook. Look at those beady little eyes.
Okay, I'm getting to it. Look, I don't know how much longer I can control my partner, so just tell me. Do you know anything about this stolen audiobook business?
You bet your ass he knows. Why do you think he's sitting there with that look on his face?
He looks like that because he's listening to us.
You always take their side.
Can we not do this right now?
Do what? Discuss our personal issues at work? Am I embarrassing you in front of your precious suspect?
A little bit, yes.
Well, excuse me.
Oh, that's mature.
You're mature.
Thank you.
I didn't mean it as a compliment.
Of course you did. It means I'm calm and level-headed.
And distant and cold and cruel. That's what you are. Heartless and cruel.
What are you, crying?
Maybe.
Steven! Steve! What the hell is going on here? Oh, hey, Chief. Nothing. We were just chatting with this nice listener here.
I'm having Steven's child!
Jesus Christ! That's impossible!
Oh, is it?
Of course it is. Have you been drinking?
Is that what you think of me? That I would drink when I'm pregnant?
You're not pregnant. Look, fellas, if you can't find a way to work it out and finish this thing, I got no choice but to put you both on suspension. Did you hear that, listener? If you don't come clean, both of us are going to lose our jobs.
And we've got a baby on the way.
No, we don't.
Okay, you're right. It's the captain's.
It was one time! Listener, this is all your fault. If you didn't look so sitting there with your stolen audiobook, I wouldn't have found out about this.
Hey, I want to apologize for my partner. He just learned I'm pregnant with somebody else's baby. Now, we really do not want him coming back in here finding out that you did not admit to squat, do we? He might do something ugly. So just go ahead and tell me the worst thing you've ever done. I'm listening. Come on, say it out loud.
Aha! I knew it, you son of a bitch! You better get yourself a good lawyer, or at least listen to the next section very carefully, scumbag! I'm getting too old for this shit!
And scene. Well, that does it for the order. So now it's time to discuss the law. So what happens once the police drag in a perp? He's turned over to the greatest legal system in the history of the world. A system where everyone is guaranteed a speedy public trial, and many get it. Where every defendant is innocent until proven guilty. That means police can pick up a guy with blood all over his hands and the phrase, "I did it," scrawled across his forehead in his own handwriting, who has a DVD of the murder with deleted scenes and a special murderer's commentary, and we will still say, benefit of the doubt. This is extremely important because all people deserve to be tried on the facts of the case. And the source of these legal protections, like all things great in America, is the Constitution. The Constitution is the greatest work of law in human history. It's like the Ten Commandments and the Magna Carta had a three-way with the rules of Monopoly under the watchful eye of Robert, breathlessly clutching his rules of order, standing ready to second any motions on the floor. We the people. That's the first line. And yet, it gets better. Do solemnly pursue life and the liberty of happiness. And I haven't even started on the treasure map on the back. Which must be followed only as the founders intended, by Nicolas Cage and a super hot blonde. But remember, it is not a living treasure map that activist judges can interpret to fit the whims of the day. James Madison wanted the adventurer who discovered it to turn right at the New Haven Broom Dasher shop and canter 9 furlongs as the jackdaw flies. So that's all you're allowed to do, even though that puts you in the westbound lane of Route 34. Like the Bible, the Constitution was perfect from day one and desperately needed to be fixed. Think of the original articles as the Old Testament. All very nice, but where's the Jesus? Nowhere. Similarly, the original Constitution is great, but where are the guns? So they added a New Testament to the Bible and 27 amendments to the Constitution. And do you know what the greatest thing about the Constitution is? Its rights apply to everybody. Which brings me to the worst thing about our Constitution. Its rights apply to everybody. America is an all-you-can-eat rights buffet, and there ain't no sneeze guard, folks. Scum like convicted felons, enemy combatants, and the non-famous getting their grubby germs over all the same rights I'm supposed to use? No thanks. What's the point of exercising my right to a speedy trial if the witness chair gives me crabs? Even worse, these folks get out of well-deserved punishments thanks to countless legal loopholes, things like appeals process or illegal search and seizure and so-called Miranda rights. This criminal coddling needs to stop. Not only in real life, but in our police procedural TV shows, too. That is valuable screen time that should be used to slowly pan over the dead stripper's body. And felon huggers are actively working to clog up our system with even more fake rights, particularly the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU. This union dedicates itself to assisting people nobody likes. For instance, the ACLU famously defended our right to free speech so that Nazis were allowed to march in the largely Jewish Skokie, Illinois. Well, you know who else let Nazis march? The Nazis. But I digress. The ultimate authority in any trial is, of course, the jury. The jury replaces the arbitrary whims of a single judge with the arbitrary whims of 12 strangers. America's jurors are selected at random from the public to form a so-called jury of one's peers. And by peers, they mean ordinary citizens who didn't come up with a good excuse to get out of jury duty. The elderly, the naive, the unimportant at work. These people are truly free from bias, as well as any plans for the next few weeks. Sadly, some people will say just about anything to get out of jury duty, like, I'm perfect for this case. I once committed that identical stabbing. Or, I have a medical condition that requires frequent masturbation. This kind of behavior is shameful. Serving on a jury, however inconvenient, is the solemn responsibility of every American, like sitting through 9 innings of baseball. But there's an even more compelling reason to do your civic duty. It pays. As much as $40 a day for federal trials. That's like working a full shift at Taco Bell, and with much less chance of coming down with cheese gun wrist. In this economy, jury duty is one of the best jobs in town. And if the money isn't incentive enough, just being surrounded by 11 average Americans is a huge boost to the ego. I had no idea they even made Velcro jeans. Plus, if you're lucky enough to be picked for a high-profile case, you could even be sequestered from the public. That, my friend, is when you've hit the big time. For however long it takes to figure out if this guy chopped up those toll booth operators, you'll enjoy all sorts of perks, including free accommodations at a Days Inn or equivalent sub-premium hotel outside the Metropolitan Center. Here's a tip. Pack light to save room in your bag for free shower caps, little shampoos, and Gideon Bibles. You'll receive up to $6 a day for breakfast. That's enough for an entire Denny's Grand Slam and a fistful of Sweet and Low packets. Plus, free security-escorted rides in a windowless van. And don't forget about all that time away from your family that you can credibly claim you didn't want. Now you can finally write that novel, learn to play guitar, or catch up on your bedazzling. In other words, serving on a jury is more than just your civic duty. It's a great way to watch Puss in Boots for free on HBO Latino. So instead of trying to get out of jury duty, you should be fighting to get on. and then doing everything in your power to milk that plump civic teat as long as you can. Just remember, criminal cases require a unanimous verdict, meaning one self-interested contrarian can really gum up the works. For instance, I strongly believe that one self-interested contrarian can really not gum up the works. See how easy that is? And that does it for law, which means it's time to discuss storage. You've probably heard a lot about the so-called housing crisis from America's negative Nellies. Well, nice try, Nellies. How can there be a housing crisis when 2.3 million Americans live in homes that don't cost them a penny? Those folks are the fortunate residents of the greatest prison system on earth. Like everything else America does, we do prison big. Here's one of my patented stats. One out of every 135 Americans is currently incarcerated. So look around the Waffle House where you're sitting right now. At least one person in this restaurant is an escaped prisoner who has fled to somewhere with familiar food. When it comes to processing citizens into inmates, no other nation on earth can touch America. And if they do touch America, that's a minimum 5 to 10 years, or life if they have a joint in their pocket. Because prisoner creation is the only manufacturing sector where we beat China. With a fourth of China's population, we have nearly twice their prisoners. Who's better at math now? And one reason we have the best prison system in the world is because we have turned a lot of it over to the private sector. Thanks to the free market, private prisons have more incentive to keep the public safe. Government prisons stay open even if they're empty, just like national parks in Detroit. But private prisons are paid per inmate, so the higher their populations, the more money they make. Private prisons are like a Super 8, only with more comfortable beds. Since their profits go up with each new inmate, private prisons have an incentive to protect the public by locking up criminals, potential criminals, and anyone who ever ended up as the murderer in a game of Clue. And private prisons use those profits to promote even higher occupancy by lobbying lawmakers to pass harsher laws. These laws lead to more inmates, and more inmates lead to more profits, which in turn lead to more harsh laws. It's the circle of life imprisonment. Looking at the numbers, odds are at least a third of you listening to me are in prison right now. Well, I'm dedicating this section just to you. I'm calling it, You've Got Jail, Stephen Colbert's Tips for Serving a Life Sentence of Fun. Other listeners, feel free to fast forward, or if you're very ambitious, press pause at this point and go get yourself incarcerated. Surviving the big house takes cunning, animal instincts, and a body covered in graphic white power tattoos. But if you follow my tips, before you can say Shawshank Redemption, you'll rise through the ranks of the inmate population and wind up winning your freedom. First, make a name for yourself in the prison yard. While all the other meatheads are grabbing the free weights, grab the oft-overlooked rhythmic gymnastics ribbon and put on a show that will rock everyone to their emotional core. Also, get a useful prison job. In the metal shop, you can grind a license plate down into a deadly throwing blade that also honors your home state of New Hampshire. Live free and die. Wear one of those prison hairnet kind of things. This not only says, I'm a badass, but also, I care about safe food preparation. Learn the harmonica. There's no better way to musically capture the sadness and loneliness of prison. Except, of course, a tenor sax. But good luck fitting one of those up your rectum. Remember, whatever you do, don't ever drop the soap in the shower. You don't want to get a reputation as clumsy. Lifelong incarceration hurts, but not so much as being picked last for the prison softball team. Lastly, control the flow of drugs in and out of the prison. For example, I suggest masterminding a muling system whereby your conjugal visitors swallow copious amounts of oxy before arrival and then vomit them into the Boom Boom trailer's restroom toilet. Once you're stocked up, find the spoon-dug crawl space under the bench press machine, emerge in C block, look for the guard with one eye patch, and ask for D-nasty. I hope that helps. But remember,
even though you're guilty of sin, you don't have to go to jail. All you need is a lawyer who believes in you. And who believes in you more than you? I don't. However, you're in luck, because our legal system will let you defend yourself in court. And as I have learned from movies and television, the outcome of any case hinges solely on a moving and dramatic closing argument. So I have prepared for you the mother of all closing arguments. Feel free to spend the trial sexting ex-girlfriends, because you're guaranteed to win when you stand up, take a slow drink of water, adjust your suspenders, and unload this baby. My turn. Bramlett Abercrombie, simple country lawyer for the defense.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Your Honor, the bailiff, the stenographer, fine citizens in the gallery, members of the academy, you've heard many arguments against me over the past several weeks. You've heard the prosecution's so-called mountain of circumstantial, eyewitness, forensic, and video evidence. All have been presented to you in the cynical confidence that their version of events would not be doubted. Confident that you, the jury, would go along with them on the assumption, the evil assumption, that all accused men lie, are basically immoral, are not to be trusted around our women. Well, I am to be trusted around your women. I can prove it. Bring me your women. But where are your women? Today I stand here alone, and you call this justice. Ask yourself, is this the face of a man who would commit...
Enter crime here.
The answer is clearly no. Look, I'm smiling. Could a guilty person be this carefree? Also ask yourself, if this crime did indeed happen, was it committed against you? No. Does it affect you? No. Then what business is it of yours? I don't come into your homes and judge you. And by the looks of you, I'm pretty sure some of you have done some unspeakable, heinous acts that would give a carny nightmares. The fact is, this case should never even have come to trial. Did you see me commit the crime? Of course not. Well, then, I submit that the security camera footage of me committing it amounts to nothing more than hearsay. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, even though I stand before you accused of terrible crimes, I want you to do something. I want you to close your eyes. Go on, close them. Envision these shameful acts as they were being committed. Can you see it? Do you have a mental picture in your head? Good. Now imagine they are being committed by someone other than me. Do you see him? He doesn't even look like me. The hair's totally off. This trial is a sham. Why are we even here? In summation, I object. Overruled. I'll allow it. I'm out of order. If it please the court, you're out of order. The whole damn system is out of order. And the bathroom's out of toilet paper. You can't handle the truth. Are you talking to me? 12 angry men. Angry, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore. If there's something strange in your neighborhood, who are you going to call? My cousin Vinny. I rest my case. Take your time deliberating. I'll hang up and listen for my answer off the air.
How long have I been at this? Jesus, I'm hungry. Got it.
Chapter 8. Food. Merriam-Webster defines the word food as noun, any nourishing substance that is... I didn't read the rest. I got hungry from all that reading, tossed the dictionary aside, and ate a burrito off my chest while watching Storage Wars. Then I got hungry from all that TV and ate a sleeve of Ritz crackers, followed by a pant leg of Oreos and a windbreaker of Crunch and Munch. Now, it goes without saying that American food is the best. From American cheese to American Eagle Outfitters, the foremost purveyor of black market eagle meat. As we all know, you are what you eat. And I am proud to say Americans are the tastiest, crispiest, saltiest, most thoroughly processed corn-based people on earth.
Not only that, we come in enormous portions, and our packaging is bright and cheery. When you think of American food, you think of abundance. We have so much food in this country that in 1867, we had to buy Alaska just for the freezer space. Chew on this fact. No famine has ever occurred in a functioning democracy, and since America is the best democracy in history, we naturally have the most food. So the next time your significant other says you're getting a little paunchy, you tell them you're not fat. You're just extra free. American food boasts something that no other country can offer, the sweet taste of man's triumph over nature. If you can plant it, grow it, or graze it, Americans can formulate it in a test tube using common household products, and do so minus the distracting nutrients. But the main thing America's done to food is to produce tons and tons of it. We're a top exporter of beef, grain, fruits, vegetables, and poultry, as well as foods that fall into no known category, like Tyson's Anytizer's chicken fries. Are they chicken? Are they fries? The answer? Any. We produce so much food, we can pour the leftovers into our cars in the form of corn-based ethanol, and thanks to generous farm subsidies that keep the price of corn low, American businesses have been able to process corn into absolutely anything and everything. Snack foods, drinks, eggs, cereal, animal feed, even the all-American hot dog is 96% corn and 4% corn anus. Corn is in our pesticides, wallpaper, plasterboards, joint compounds, cardboard boxes, cosmetics, batteries, and vitamins. Corn is so versatile, it's the Daniel Day-Lewis of American staple crops. With all this corn being crammed into our corn holes, it should come as no surprise that we are mostly corn. Want proof? Corn has ears. We have ears. Coincidence or corn incidence? Of course, Americans don't just grow food, we change it. We make it saltier and fattier, which is to say, Americaner. After all, freedom isn't sugar-free. We have learned how to stuff foods inside other foods to create whole new foods like turducken, a chicken inside of a duck inside of a turkey, or Oreojos, which is an Oreo inside of a yodel inside of a ho-ho. Toss some frozen yogurt in there, and you got yourself a Froyo Oreojo. And thanks to Monsanto's genetically engineered seeds, we will soon be able to grow potatoes that can take the SATs for you. Sure, there's a chance that somewhere in our fiddling, we switch on the gene for fruit-onset Parkinson's. But as the saying goes, you can't make a sentient fruit salad without breaking a few watermelons that now hatch from eggs. As everybody knows, when left in its natural state, food is disgusting. Take the pomegranate. A horrifying alien womb of a fruit filled with tiny juice pupae. But that's only one of nature's disgusting edible pranks. Why are there artichokes? They look like something they shoved up a heretic's rectum during the Spanish Inquisition. Sure, artichoke leaves taste good dipped in a buttery hollandaise, but so do Huggies. For the record, I believe America's food scientists are national heroes. They are second only to NASA engineers in their effort to propel man to the limits of his natural environment. But for every conveniently stackable square chicken, an abomination slips through the R&D department. When I was a lad, he had only four types of gum. Wrigley Spearmint, Juicy Fruit, Bazooka Joe, and those carpenter shims that came with baseball cards. But these days, chewing gum is as supple and as flamboyant as a Saigon ladyboy. Case in point, Stride Shift flavor-changing gum. You heard me. Flavor-changing. The gum starts out as one flavor, then blindsides the taste buds with a different and sometimes unwelcome flavor. What was once berry is now inexplicably mint. God's natural order has been upturned right inside the temple of your own mouth. It should be obvious to all that Stride is nothing more than a bi-curious gum threatening to destroy the sanctity of straight flavorage. Is it exciting? Sure. Illicit? Yes. But I believe that being minty is a choice. Stride has got to get its act together and do the right thing immediately. It must suppress its burning desire to swing, accept Jesus, and settle down into a flavorless marriage with a pack of sugar-free Trident. But there's a reason we have pushed the limits of food science.
America is obsessed with food. We don't just settle for constantly eating food with our mouths. We also demand to chew it with our eyes. Our TVs are brimming with hot man-on-pan action. You can't channel surf for very long without seeing a turkey getting stuffed over and over until they finally cut to the gravy shot. But the greatest thing about today's food renaissance is that you no longer need to be a chef to be on TV. The only prerequisite to food stardom is knowing what hole to jam it in. In Man vs. Food, host Adam Richman travels from city to city across America doing what Americans can only dream of, hitting a few landmarks and then being cheered on by locals while attempting to eat a 7-pound burrito. You see, America is the only country on earth with so much food that its people have an adversarial relationship with sustenance. Food is coming at us from all directions. I mean, how many times have you been minding your own business, then suddenly found yourself surrounded by empty Arby's wrappers and filled with a vague sense of having been violated? Our anger at food is the envy of the world, so the next time you don't want to finish that Wendy's double baconator, just remember there's a starving kid in Africa who would love to hate himself for eating it. Speaking of starving kids in Africa, were you aware that food sometimes exists in other countries too? It's true. Now, we're a nation of immigrants, and when we got to America, we cast off all those oppressive dishes from our various old countries and began making foods that reflected our diversity. Our food was all about choice, 31 flavors, 57 varieties, 99 problems, but a man which ain't one. Our culinary freedom is as unlimited as our breadsticks. America eats every other country under the table, and then we eat the table, which is a great source of fiber. But it's important that we pay attention to the many foreign foods encroaching on American sovereign stomachs. Mexican, Chinese, French, Italian. If I had the time, I could name literally thousands of other countries. For instance, Brazil. And others. So to help you stay vigilant, I'm going to touch on some of the main threats out there. First up, Chinese food. Now, I can't tell you which Chinese dish I dislike the most. The number 41 or the number 16. To me, it all tastes like a steaming pile of number 2. But the biggest insult comes from their so-called desserts, like the fortune cookie, the only dessert so boring it comes with reading material. Now, Mexican or Latina food is undeniably growing in popularity. And yes, I've heard all the hype about Mexican food. It's spicy and exciting and even microwavable. But I've also heard things like, "Did I just eat dirt?" It may not win me any so-called amigos to say so, but let's face facts. Every Mexican meal comes with significant risk of digestive distress. We've all been there. However, there is one Mexican item I do enjoy. Their ingenious taco salad. It's everything you find in every other Mexican dish. Corn tortilla, meat, beans, onion, avocado, soap. But it's in a bowl you can eat. They never need to wash a dish. Next, Spanish tapas. This is my least favorite kind of Mexican food. These tiny plates were originally made to set on top of sangria glasses to protect their precious fruit booze from flies. Oh, great idea! Flies in my wine? Horrible! Flies in my food? Fantastico! Now let us all make love and take a 4-hour nap. And yes, I do speak a little Spanish. And as much as I love how these tiny plates make me feel like a giant rampaging through a village of grilled octopus, they also promote sharing, and folks, that is gastro-socialism. Next, Middle Eastern food. Nation, it's no secret, I do not trust Middle Eastern food. That's right, I've got the deep-fried falafel balls to finally say it. And I have good reason to be suspicious. For starters, almost every dish seems to be made from chickpeas. But did you know that chickpeas also have another name? Garbanzo beans. What are these chickpeas trying to hide? Okay, Ethiopian food. I'd love to crap on Ethiopian food, but by the looks of it, somebody beat me to it. Lastly, French food. Escar stop. The NPR crowd may love their complex sauces that titillate the palate and seduce the senses. But when it comes to eating, the last thing I want to worry about is a piece of chicken trying to get to third base with my tongue.
But as a friend, I must warn you. The biggest threat to American food is not from abroad. It is from within. It is the chorus of naysayers out there who have made it their business to keep America stuck in the past. I'm talking about the food Gestapo like Eric Schlosser, Michael Pollan, and Alice Waters. These self-described locavores are trying to squash agribusiness by encouraging us to eat locally. I'm sorry, but I want a chicken that has seen the world, not some provincial loser capon who's free-ranging it at a poultry commune. I want a chicken with some miles on it. I want to taste the petroleum from the cargo hold, where it was flash-frozen on an unregulated Indonesian barge. And should it give me a foodborne illness, who cares? Those 10 pounds I drop from vomiting will just help me fit back into my old high school jeans. It's win-win. Chapter over. Move on. My turn. Jonathan Milstein Garcia, Berkeley, California, locavore.
Greetings and namaste. The purpose of my message is simple: to forever change the world's approach to food production and transport, and to get credit for it. If I should fail, there will be nothing left to slow us from our suicidal course with the irreversible destruction of our ecosystem. And my only solace will be that it was all your fault. You see, there was a time in America when we knew where our food came from. It came from no farther than a farmer could steer his ox cart, which is why our diet consisted largely of hardtack and turnips splattered with ox dung. Local ox dung. These days, our tables spilleth over with chilies from Turkey, turkeys from Chile, Swedish fish from Switzerland, and Swiss Miss from Wisconsin. The only thing American about the average American meal is how much fossil fuel it burned getting to us. Well, not in the Milstein Garcia household. I always know precisely where my food comes from, as well as where my food's food came from, and where my food's food came from. I draw the line at 10 food generations, which is regrettably unambitious, but still 6 generations farther than I can trace my family. Unfortunately, great-great-grandma Beatrice was not certified organic. I wish you could be here with me to witness the locally grown bounty that is springtime in Northern California. The Victoria rhubarb have just come into season, their pink stalks blushing like a young girl at her first lute recital. I picked up a fresh bunch at the farmer's market this morning for a mere $18. I must find a use for them before this evening when they go back out of season. Lars, my local source for poultry, except ducklings, which I raise myself in the upstairs bathtub, stopped by earlier today with fresh eggs. I insist on only the freshest ingredients, which means that Lars holds each hen so they can lay directly into my mixing bowl. The occasional tail feather in my Bernays sauce is well worth the rich, silky sense of superiority. Things can get a little tricky when I'm making custard, as I have limited counter space to perch a Holstein cow. I must discuss that with the artisanal cabinet maker building my new kitchen set, using only colonial-era tools. Every redesign sets him back 12 years. Tomorrow, I'll take the unicycle up to visit Lord Byron, the Tamworth hog being raised by a local comp lit professor for our winter sausage. Unlike factory farm pigs, which are confined to cramping enclosures, Lord Byron has the run of a 5-acre estate, complete with a spring-fed wallowing hole, ropes course, and archery range. In the evenings, there's live chamber music. The humane treatment is clearly paying off, as Lord Byron has already acquired a 5th-grade reading level. We haven't decided yet, but we'll probably use a blend of alder and cherry wood to smoke his back fat. Of course, Lord Byron will be asked to weigh in. As you can tell, eating a strictly local diet is both practical and economical, particularly if you are independently wealthy and have unlimited free time. So, to the shrill critics who cry that most Americans have enough trouble getting sufficient food on the table without worrying about where it came from, I say, please keep it down. You're upsetting my heirloom zucchinis, and they just came off their antidepressants.
Chapter, last one.
I am drunk. And I earned it. I'm done. I did it. I fixed America again, which again did not need fixing. And I'm going to sit here and drink until my Pulitzer shows up. I started the night singing over at Lucky Chang's, but I guess there's a limit to how many times you can sing America the Beautiful in America. That number is 23, by the way. You don't see me going over to China and telling them to stop singing Kung Fu Fighting. Whatever. Their loss. I'm feeling good. Pistachio shells are so durable. You'd think they'd do something with them, like flooring. You need thick shoes to walk on it, though. Where was I? Right. Finishing the book. Is the tape recorder on? Yes, it is. Okay, red light. Here we go. The end. America is great, and it is great. So fuck Chang. Me and Tapey here have moved on to a classic American bar, Joe's Tavern. Dollar drafts, dartboards, beer nuts, hookah service, pita bread. Because technically it's not Joe's, it's Yurfi's, and he's Turkish, but he plays enough Bon Jovi to make up for it. I love this place. In fact, bartender, come here. I'd like to buy a drink for everybody in this establishment. Then I would like you to give them all to me. Ow! All right,
fine. Get your foot off me. No, you get down from the bar.
Fine, guess it's just you and me, Barstool. Wonder how far back I can rock on you.
Yeah, girl. Look at me, assholes. I'm Paul Revere. The British are coming. I'm okay. Get off me, you filthy red coats.
Come on up, Stooley. There you go. You look thirsty. Could I get a bottle of ice and a bucket of cinnamon schnapps, please? This country is just getting so glonky. That's a word, right? Yeah, glonky. That's totally a word. Glonky. Glonky. Glonky, 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 glonky. It's weird, you say it enough and it starts to sound all glonky.
Have you seen China lately? That place is huge. And math.
Face it, we're Rome. The empire is crumbling at the edges. We live in the last decadent days of a dying giant who's just trying to get in one last gay orgy before he falls on his samurai sword.
You ever wonder what it would be like to be gay? I mean, not really gay, just like Gay Freaky Friday, where me and a gay switch until we understand each other, you know? Like a Freaky Friday. But none of the gay stuff. That would definitely happen while I was gay, because, come on, who would gay guys go for, me or a gay guy? None of it would count once we switch back. That is the bedrock of Freaky Life Swap. God, I wish Jamie Lee Curtis was still alive.
And now, America's over. Roll credits. Executive producer, George Washington. Based on the book, The Constitution, by Sapphire. The barbarians are at the gates, and I bet you Turks are the first in line, licking your chops. What's Constantinople this time, Yurfi? New York? Los Angeles? Orlando? Space Mountain would make one hell of a mosque.
It's a joke. It's a joke. Come here.
Let me hug you, you big furry Ottoman. I'm just sad, okay?
Just let me be sad.
God, I wish John Madden was still alive. You don't get it. I have a responsibility with this audiobook to hold the line again. Why have you stopped pouring rum into that glass? Keep pouring rum into that glass. Thank you. So let's all raise a glass and toast Ronald Reagan and Abraham Lincoln riding horses together in heaven.
No, wait. It's heaven. Make that a tandem horse. Bottoms up.
Ow, Jesus. Why are your candles in the exact same glasses as your drinks? Could I get some ice? And sterilize it with some rum.
Hey, look, some joker left his tape recorder on the bar. I'm gonna leave a message on it. Hello, jerk. You left your tape recorder on the bar, you dummy. This is what you sound like. Blah, 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 tape recorder. I'm so important. Blah, blah.
That's good. I should be getting this down. Where's my tape recorder?
Has anyone seen my tape recorder? It looks just like this one, but mine. Forget it. I'll just use this one. Snooze, you lose, Dick Burger. It's mine now. Barkeep. Pint of lager from my new friend, the tape recorder here.
Okay, you don't have to yell. I was leaving anyway. Right after I take a nap in this Papa Shot machine.
Hey, nobody do Papa Shot for a while. It's my bed now.
Ah, that's good. I have a confession to make. I think about me all the time. I guess everybody does, but here's what I don't understand. Everybody else's me is them. They're their own me. I'm only my me. If I care about America, do I have to care about all those other me's too? Oh shit. There's a me in America. And an Erica. I'm so tired. So sorry. Good night, America. I love you. And me. And Erica.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of America Again. Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Were. Written by Stephen Colbert, Richard Dahm, Paul Dinello, Barry Julian, Tom Purcell, Michael Broom, Eric Drysdale, Rob Dubin, Glenn Eichler, Dan Guterman, Peter Gwynn, Jay Katzer, Frank Lesser, Opus Moreschi, Meredith Scardino, Scott Sherman, and Max Werner. Dictated by Stephen Colbert. Featuring Tim Meadows and Jordan Ruderman. Adapted by Aaron Cohen. Executive producers, Stephen Colbert and Meredith Bennett. Produced by Aaron Cohen and Michelle McGonigal. Directed by Aaron Cohen. Recorded by Todd Kilponen. Post-production by Christine M. Farrell. Sound design by Michelle McGonigal and Christine M. Farrell. Original music theme by Brendan Feeney. Audio Media Production. America Again is also available in print from Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2012 by Spartina Productions. Audio production copyright 2012 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher is unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.